So, no misunderstandings. I didn't redress for not overheating in the final description. It's just pretty hot here, so that's why I'm... And also, Krongo and Kadu appears here not because we think it's Niger Congo, but we think it's quite relevant, and so Guillaume's actually is a nice... was a nice preparation for this thing, because we try to show that our approach works actually very nicely also with more complex number systems. And what we, okay, so we are talking about gender and number in Kadu with particular reference to Congo, and I should tell right away, this should have been written up years ago. A lot of the work which is in here actually evolved out of a course I taught on gender in Zurich, and the master thesis which one of the students basically chose and applied my approach, and it worked out well, and it never got up. We never came to write it up because he dropped out of academia and I didn't have the time to do it on my own, and so now we take up this interesting case of Krongo and actually the Kadu family in general, because it's really very interesting in terms of gender number interaction. Okay, so this is Neuhaus 2008 is the thing which is a master-like thesis, but of course now we have reworked it considerably, so so now it's the two of us presenting this. So Krongo is a member of the small Kadu family, less than 10 languages in the Nuba Mountains of the Sudan. It's the only sufficiently described grammar, well known by Ray, 1985. And we propose a detailed analysis of the available Krongo data on the basis of the approach to gender and number analysis you have seen at least partly in the article, and which has been laid out also in a few other places. So we have our kind of strict distinction between agreement classes and the derived gender system of a language, and we look at the noun morphology, so at noun form classes, and the resulting inflection system or dereflection system of that language and how they interact. So we first start with agreement. And the agreement system is already a little bit complicated. If you look at table one, you see there's a lot of conflation between the different agreement classes and different agreement targets. But if you look on the agreement patterns over all agreement targets, it's pretty clear that the language has four agreement classes. Somewhat misleadingly, and this is possibly the major topic of our, or one of the major topics of our talk, these agreement classes are actually called by Re, or labeled with masculine, feminine, neuter, and plural. And of course you think right away, okay, that's the gender system, and the discomforting plural, you don't really know what to make out of it. But if you look at how this works, these are actually agreement classes in the normal sense of the word, of Zalesniak, Corbett, etc. Okay. So, her labels, of course, are based on considerable correlation between these agreement classes with unmarked nouns. And you can see in 1A, B, and C examples of the agreement. And you see that basically there are mostly thematic consonantal markers, not in all agreement targets, but in some, especially on the verb prefixes or the demonstrative prefixes of these classes. And the fourth class plural is a kind of mixture between the three basic classes, masculine, feminine, and neuter. So now if you go by Corbett and try to derive the gender system of that language by looking at how the agreement classes map over number categories, you come up with those schemas we have seen in several talks, And since Re doesn't really say explicitly much about the number categories, you start out with saying, okay, usually most nouns are bipartite inflection patterns, one kind of singular, another kind of plural, so you think, okay, it's a binary number opposition between singular and plural. So now if you apply that, and she gives actually the data in a very detailed way, so you, she has a list of 430 nouns at the appendix of the book, and she gives exactly, so what's the noun form in the singular, what's the agreement, or the gender in her words, and how does the plural form look, and you can also know how, from the plural form, what's the agreement. So now if you take that information, you come up with a gender system as in figure one. And you say, okay, well, it looks like complex, and since we've seen so much on Niger Congo, you think you're not surprised. Yeah, some languages just look so complicated, but it turns out that is there's another problem. And here we go to with respect to the, you have to know something about the number system, that the structural gender system from this simplistic analysis in figure one actually has to be reanalyzed, because the number system is more complex. And now I give over to Jan.
Up to this point, our analysis was based on this bipartite number system with the two number values being singular and plural. But unfortunately, there's a problem with this kind of analysis, which lies in the fact that nouns with the same agreement class pairing exhibit different unmarked number reference and form. So this is exemplified in table 2 below, which shows the three different number marking patterns that can be found in Krongo. To see, they are called A, B, and C. A for an unmarked singular form with a marked plural form, B for an unmarked plural or collective form and a singulative marked form, and C being a form called replacement pattern by Dimendal, where both singular and plural forms are marked. And what we have here is, as I said, an example of this so-called tripartite number marking system, which is recurrent in the area in both Nios, in this area, in the Nuba Mountains, for example, in both Nilo-Saharan and Afro-Asiatic languages. And for this background, a simple gender system, as we saw in figure one, fails to give an adequate picture of the structuring of gender in Krongo. So this is why, besides the four agreement classes, which Tom was talking about, also the complex number marking patterns, as well as the noun form classes, must be integrated in the analysis. The noun form classes, which I just mentioned, are listed in table 3, and you can see that we're dealing with a complex noun affix system with various number signing and derivational functions. Those noun form classes correlate considerably with agreement class, which can be found in the rightmost column. Furthermore, it indicates an important role of formal assignment in terms of Corbett 91, which we will take up again later. 3.3, number inflection, agreement, and genders. So if we incorporate both the tripartite number system with its different marking patterns as well as the noun form class system in our analysis, we will get a more detailed system compared to the first one, with 15 combinations of inflection classes and agreement pairs. This system is illustrated in table 4 and figure 2 on the other side. So if you take a look at the first combinations, we'll see that they all exhibit number marking pattern A, which is realized by two different ways of inflection, plus six distinctive agreement pairs, and so on with pattern B, and pattern C with B having five pairs and C four. As this system is, as I said, very complex, what we want to do next is to reduce and simplify it as much as possible. To do so, our first step is to integrate the four replacement pattern pairs from C into four marked plural pattern pairs from A, as they differ only by morphology and not by semantics. So typically they're all countnouns, and because of that we integrated them from pattern C into A. After that first step, we will have a system with 11 instead of 15 combinations, which is illustrated in table 5 and figure 3. As they can see that the pairs 12 to 15, the replacement pattern pairs, are moved to the patterns 1, 2, 3, and 6. You will see this because we added it with a plus sign there in the rightmost column. As the system is still rather complex, the next step would be to eliminate 8 more of the 11 remaining combinations, because we want simplicity, and because of that we interpret those parents as incorrects, and eliminate them as well as we did before with number C. Now we eliminate the remaining patterns 3 to 11. And this affects the three agreement class specified unmarked noun groups that converge in a single plural form of agreement class 1. The four agreement class specified unmarked noun groups that converge in a singulative form of agreement class 3, and the agreement class specified unmarked noun group, the one which has a singulative counterpart of agreement class 2. And this means that only transnumeral nouns and the first three of 11 combinations are frequent and or productive, which can be underlined by the number of tokens of each combination in the rightmost column of table 5. There you can see that with 127, 45, and 54 out of those 439, those three pairings, they build the majority of the whole of the analyzed nouns. The remaining four agreement class specified unmarked noun groups, three contain count nouns that all converge in plural forms of agreement class 4, whereas the fourth class is comprised exclusively of transnumeral non-count nouns. After that, our reduction process is now completed, and we can see that the final picture confirms the decisive gender specifying role of unmarked nouns as reflected in the semantically driven labels for agreement class, the ones Tom mentioned in the beginning. As we're not dealing with a tripartite gender system, but rather with a quadripartite one, which comprises an additional minor gender for some transnumeral nouns, we'd say that the transnumeral nouns, they have to be separated from the system and grouped in a single gender which is added to this tripartite system. So in conclusion of this part, it can be said that the noun list strongly confirms genders involving count nouns, except for the transnumeral gender, which we nevertheless consider necessary for structural reasons. Even if there is no real statistical difference in the number of tokens to cases analyzed above as incorrect. So the transnumerals, they are, if we talk about the tokens, they are not really a bigger class than the classes we eliminated because of incorrect reasons. And this can be seen in table 6 with the frequencies of the 4 genders in Chrome.
Well, I'm not so sure. Possibly we should have talked a little more about our reduction processes, because it's not just for the sake of complicity, but simplicity.
Okay.
But well, I continue with 4 on the gender assignment. If you so we start from the this gender system, or the inventory of genders, masculine, feminine, neutral, and plural, in table 6. And if you see how gender is assigned to nouns in Krongo, it complies actually with the expected assignment hierarchy by COVID-1991, namely that semantic criteria are more important than morphological criteria, and more than, in these again, to phonological criteria. So one can say, in terms of semantic criteria, they take precedence because, irrespective of the noun form of a noun, natural sex is the primary feature according to which masculine and feminine in particular are assigned. And this is, of course, why many nouns where this feature is relevant are so-called double gender nouns. So irrespective of how they look in terms of form, they will agree either with feminine or masculine. Certain terms denoting persons or pets also exhibit distinctive forms for males as well as females, either because they are suppletive forms or because they are marked by the derivational prefix cha for male nouns and ma for female nouns. So here you see, while also derivation is relevant, so as soon as this cha-ma prefixes are applied, it's a kind of derivation for female and male entities, and this again will determine the agreement of these nouns. Another semantically driven observation is that large animals are mostly associated with masculine, whereas small animals are associated with feminine. And finally, with 450 nouns you can't do very much, but there are signs that there are also cases of so-called associative gender assignment. This means, it's known from Australian languages, there is a female gender, and all tools which women use go to the feminine gender. And this is meant by associative assignment. I think there are, I think we can explain some of the cases with this, but for this simply the, of course, it's a problem with a small amount of nouns. So then the next is, of course, formal assignment. And I think possibly Jan was a bit fast, but he noted that in the where we laid out the table of noun form classes, there is a very strong correlation that once you see the form of the noun, what prefix it has, you can predict the agreement. And in particular in the unmarked form, that is, of course, very important. So in the absence of semantic criteria, in case there is nothing with we can apply the feature of natural sex, agreement is mostly assigned according to a noun form, namely which prefix it has. So after this feature masculine feminine, there's very strong formal assignment in terms of, or morphological assignment. I've already said you can have a look at table 3, where you can see the relatively clear patterns. Now, if morphology is absent, there is still a good predictor of the assignment, namely, I've noted already in connection with the agreement patterns, two of the agreement classes have clear thematic consonants. So if we go back to table one, M is the thematic consonant for agreement class two, and N is the thematic consonant of class three. And so, and indeed, there is a good correlation. Agreement two for the verbal agreement exponent M correlates with the assignment of M initial nouns to that of these nouns. The agreement exponent N on the verbal agreement correlates with the assignment of nouns with start and N, and the agreement class 4 with the exponent K in verbal agreement correlates with K initial nouns. And now don't be even more confused. We skip 5 for a moment because Jan will put this at the end, because our conclusions basically actually apply only to our Prongo data. So you quickly go to the last section, general conclusions. So what are the conclusions from our reanalysis of Prongo? First, as we've pointed out in our model, agreement class and gender should be treated as separate analytical categories. So gender relates to a lexical item in the abstract lexicon, while agreement class to a concrete noun form. And this is basically what Rey didn't do actually in her analysis. When she calls of masculine, feminine, and neuter, she actually means agreement classes. Why it happens that the final gender system is not so different is because the gender is assigned by the unmarked noun form, and as soon any singulative will converge on one class, and any plural of that unmarked noun form converges on one noun class. So it is a little bit like Indo-European, where the gender is basically determined by the singular, by the unmarked nouns. And plural marking is just conflating the agreement into a single class. So like in English, he, she, it, this is the old gender distinction in the singular, and plural is just all the differentiation in the singular converge in the plural. And Congo is actually very parallel, except that it has an additional number category in the singulative, but the phenomenon is actually the same. You have the gender differentiation in the unmarked noun forms, and the singulatives all converge in the normal case in agreement class 3. Yeah, so basically singulatives converge in the agreement class 3 and the plurals converge in agreement class 4. Yeah? Okay, then the agreement classes interact with the tripartite number system and need to be disentangled. So this is the complication with Prongo, and we assume with Cardo languages in general, that you first have to say, okay, wait a second, before I build up my gender system, I need to be clear what's the number system. And of course, we had the nice discussion now with Guillaume on Atlantic languages and in other cases. In some cases, this also relates to Niger-Congo. If you have a lexical item which partakes in a tripartite number system, you have to relate this accordingly with also the agreement patterns. And of course, then the analysis is also more complicated, as you as is obvious. Okay, what is important, and this is interesting from a cross-linguistic perspective, the agreement classes themselves, which you see in table one, are not fully dedicated to a single gender nor a single number value. So this reiterates our point why we want to distinguish agreement classes from particular values, whether it's number, gender, or whatever. And this is in Prongo particularly due to the fact that there are many nouns which have idiosyncratic marking patterns. I mean, we've operated quite a lot with this concept, with Corbett's concept of incorrectness, but I think it is important to distinguish between numerically frequent patterns and exceptions in the lexicon. And of course, it is a fact in Prongo, yes, the exceptions are numerous and sometimes, but this might also be a function of our restricted data we have, sometimes an incorrect class cannot yet clearly be distinguished also from a kind of small class that should be called a gender, for instance. Okay, so now the interesting case of Krongo, at least, and we suspect Kadu in general. On the one hand, the gender system, as I've said already, is similar to the European cases. Namely, gender assignment happens in the unmarked number form of a noun, and all the other number forms, namely here the singulative and the plural, they just converge into a single agreement class. And that's why you get in our final analysis basically a system. So if you have English, it would be he. No, this doesn't work.
Oh,
okay, that's better. But you know what I mean. Basically, English would be this convergence from the singular into a single plural class, and Krongo has basically the same towards the singulative. But the phenomenon is exactly the same. The unmarked number form gives you the gender, and in the other numbers, nothing much happens. Of course, if you take away all the incorrect cases, of course, which makes the analysis here more complicated. And but what is also interesting, Krongo in his aerial context, it's not only like European, it's actually similar in that respect to aerially closed languages, namely with Cushitic, where you have this interesting phenomenon that one agreement class and even the gender system is kind of interacting with this concept of plural. And of course, this is actually a notorious problem in Cushitic analysis of gender and number and how they relate. And I think that's not coincidence. This is not coincidence that Kadu spoken close to Cushitic language, that there are similar phenomena. So in this sense, Krongo is a kind of in-between phenomenon. Okay, so then now I give over again to some results of Jan regarding some other Kadu languages.
Aiming for a full comparison of
you go back to five
Kadu languages exactly
in the handout.
Number five, the comparison to other Kadu languages, which is restricted to Kacha and Kaiga only. There are at least six Kadu languages overall, but there's only useful data for those three languages. Because we were only able to work with Kacha data and Kaiga data. But even for those languages, there was far less data available than it was for Krongo. Turning to Kacha first. A major difference to Krongo can be observed in the agreement system, which comprises only three agreement classes in comparison to Krongo with its four classes. And as it already was the case with Re and Krongo, Turner, 2016, who serves as the major source for the Kacha analysis, and also Gilai, interpret agreement classes in the tradition of Corbett as genders. So they name the classes M, F, and N, as they did with the Krongo classes, with reference to their semantic core. As illustrated in Table 7, agreement markers can be found on modifiers in NPs and verbs, so attributive, adjectives, demonstrative, pronouns, and so on. The verbs, then they show subject agreement. There you see, you already see, I will come back to that later in the summary, that also here we have some thematic consonants which are pretty similar to the Krongo ones. But as I said, I will come back to that later. Further, many Kacha nouns exhibit agreement polarity, so that a change in number is accompanied by a change in agreement. Which means that if a noun is morphologically marked for number, so singulative or plurative, its agreement is determined by the affix. So agreement allocation can be seen as a property of the affix and not of the noun's root, which is why a change in number causes a change in agreement class in most cases. Now, in table 8, you find all Kacha noun form classes together with their number category and the agreement class they denote. Also there, you will find some noun form classes which are pretty similar to the Prongo noun form classes, but they will be summarized as well in the end. Yes, as was done before for Prongo, by mapping the different agreement classes over the number parents, in this case three number categories, the following potential gender system can be established for Kacha. This system is not as elaborated as the Prongo system, which is mainly due to the MIDR databases, which does not show the frequency of the noun form classes. So in the case of Kacha, we didn't have a whole grammar with a big word list. We just had some tendencies in frequency. So no real numbers, just like remarks as productive, more productive, less productive, unproductive, and so on. But you will see that this potential system in figure 5, and they will also see that this system also resembles the Prongo system, but of course without class 4. The Kaiba data, which is even less than the Kacha data, so here our working basis was this short grammar sketch also compiled by Re in 94. And turning to that, we can say that regarding agreement, Kaiga deviates radically from Prongo and Kacha in that it does not contain a gender system. So before we talked about four gender classes, agreement classes in Prongo, three agreement classes in Kacha, and with resulting gender systems, but here we don't have any gender agreement. Consequently, there is no agreement at all which we could show, but however, there is number agreement that can be found. And as Prongo and Kacha, Kaiga also exhibits a tripartite number system, so that's a similarity. And it's also with, of course, unmarked forms, singulatives, and plurative, so it works exactly as the Prongo and Kacha system. This in turn means that nouns are either inherently or overtly marked for number, and in case of inherently marked nouns, the number reference can be deduced from the agreement targets, which are verbs and demonstrative pronouns. And in case of overtly marked nouns, the number reference can be deduced from noun form class prefixes, which can be found in table 9 below. So this is a similar table to the Prongo and Kacha table, and there are also some noun form classes, especially the plurative class with the N plus vowel, and the singulative class with the D vowel and the nasal, which resemble both Prongo and Kacha singulative and plurative classes pretty closely. Yes, so to summarize this comparison, I just listed some of the major features of the three languages, which is it's table 10. And first of all, it's agreement. Of course, now we know that there is agreement in Prongo and Kacha, but not in Kaiga. So gender agreement, we know there is number agreement, but at the moment we're talking about gender agreement. Prongo exhibits four agreement classes, whereas Kacha exhibits only three. The agreement targets are pretty similar, with with Krongo adding prepositions and Katcha adjectives. We're talking about the thematic exponents of the three, respective four agreement classes. For agreement class one, and Krongo, there is no thematic exponent, no clear thematic exponent, whereas for Katcha there is this J exponent. Agreement class two, it's very similar, as well as agreement class three. So in those classes, there is biggest similarity in the agreement systems in the thematic exponents. Whereas four, there is no thematic exponent or no clear thematic exponent in Krongo, but it really doesn't matter for our comparison now because there isn't a agreement class four in Katcha anyway. Now, if we talk about the productivity of the plurative or singulative affixes, which all of the three languages show or contain, we see that there are similarities both for plurative and singulative affixes, especially in the productive ones. So the first one, as I said before, and with a vowel, and for the singulative, productive singulative affixes, the T vowel, and there can be a nasal before, in front of it, and following it. For the unproductive affixes, also plurative and singulative, there are similarities. M vowel, T vowel, affix, for example, or the KV, GV vowel for plurative with Katcha and Kaiga. As Tom said before, of course, there are. It's necessary to analyze more nouns for, or in general, full lexicon of Krongo. And for the other languages, it's essential to construct corpora word lists on the basis of which we can continue our analysis of hopefully all of the, at least six Kado languages. So before I finish our talk, just one thing for your information on page two. We were talking about, or it's written with the 485 nouns. This is the old number by Neuhaus. The new number change that to 439. So we work our analysis. New analysis is based on 439. So also the numbers here, for example, in table 5, they are based on 439 and not 485. Yeah, thank you.
Thank you for the talk, and to the floor is open for questions, comments.
So when you look at table 10, it says at the bottom comparison of gender and number of features. Okay, so we have in Krongo four agreement classes. We have agreement, yes. What about gender?
Well, our current analysis would be four genders and this potential fourth gender for transnumeral nouns.
Okay.
But as we said, statistically, we have, it's a little bit unsatisfactory because the number of the nouns which would go into this, that gender are of the same inventory size as some of the incorrect parents. Mm-hmm. And of course, this is not very satisfactory. So we really see that we need to have a fuller picture of the
But at least with respect to the data that you have,
yes,
this
yes.
is the way the
yes.
pie gets cut up.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then the catch up, of course, is not relevant because there is only these three classes and this problem with plural gender or something doesn't, or transgender or whatever is, doesn't mm-hmm. arise. And of course, the question is, what would be the original situation? Was it a tripartite system as in Kacha and Krongo is the innovation? Or is it the other way around? I think if you look at the agreement system in Kacha in Table 7, there actually you see it's so regular, if it started out in such a simple and transparent way, you would think Krongo is the more complex system, we shouldn't speculate there actually.
I have a question regarding this consonant elision that you identify for Krongo. It seems very counterintuitive that you analyze what's going on in a consonant elision, and then you say the form with the consonant is unmarked when we're only looking at a subset of the data, but your impression would initially be looking at table 2, for example, you have chaleli and aleli. The default hypothesis, I assume, would be that the ch is a prefix that's marking non-plural, and then there is no prefix on the aleli. And there's even a case, you identify later on, I meant drum started with an F, and he said that F gets elided in the plural, and yet then in Kacha you identify a singular prefix F, so it seems at least historically, well, it's not really elision, it's that there was a prefix F. And again, this just gets, I think, at how difficult it can be when you talk about noun form classes. There are all these irregularities. I mean, you could say if you wanted, well, English has a noun form class marked by man at the end of nouns, and that alternates with being able to have men or woman there too, policeman, policewoman. Mm-hmm. But people are probably not going to find that particularly descriptively useful, right? So especially in a system like this, I feel like it's difficult to draw the line between saying, well, how do you convince someone that this should be the noun form class? With agreement, it's much easier because you get the same marker across multiple things. But I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yes, I mean, of course, we had the discussion back and forth and were thinking about both possibilities. I think what we've chosen here is race analysis, right?
Yeah.
So she calls it that way, but I think that's not our primary reason. It's not that we wouldn't have the, that's changing her analysis if we think it's more useful. I think the best approach is look at other related languages and actually see whether you can reconstruct what the original form of a particular noun was. The problem is in that area, there is a lot of phenomena of initial consonant deletion due to morphophonology or other process. So that's why I agree with you. Yes, it's on the one hand, at the face of it, you could just say, yeah, it's just another prefix. But taking other information on that area into account, that actually certain types of consonants might have been deleted. So it's not our final analysis, that's basically Jan's task in his PhD to figure out what is actually historically behind it. But you're completely right. The problem is there, and we wouldn't stick our neck to say, well, that's the final analysis. I mean, that's what we could do right now. And
the famous articles by Brian, etc.
Yes. So if you look at other languages in the area, so some of Dimmendal's, it's amazing how number marking patterns, which used to be regular, become messed up by certain phonological processes, and some consonants or segments get deleted, and then you don't see the systematicity. So that's why we don't really know what's, we're not sure. Wait, goes on.
other questions?
Okay.
No. So, we thank you again for your talk. And I think then we can start right away with the final discussion.
There's actually a kind of change in the schedule. The thing is, we indicated that we can be here until 8 o'clock, including the reception. But it turns out we have to actually move out here 7:30 because people have to clean up the place here, and the elevator will stop working and something like that. So we kind of will stop basically 7:30, and we can also, just possibly slide in smoothly into the reception from our discussion. So we don't have to take it so super seriously in terms of roundtable. But
yes.